This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Happy Saturday afternoon, everyone. The sun's shining bright for now. Makes for a good weather for a Sox game, Lou Cairo, which you'll be going to a little bit later on, huh?
Absolutely. Always good weather for a Sox game when you're in a suite.
Yeah, I know. I always forget that we have this Cubs fan, Sox fan thing going on. But you must be excited about the new closer we gave you.
I'm very, very happy. I think Kimbrel's awesome. I think between him and Hendricks, it will just be the toss up who's going to take the ninth inning between the two of them. Both dynamite, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great problem to have in the back of your bullpen, for sure. Lou Cairo, GWC Injury Attorneys, you know, we've known each other a long time. Lou, I was looking at the website and your bio. I love the story of, you know, your dad with the construction company, and you have always been someone who fights for the quote-unquote little guy, the average guy or gal out there that needs help.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, true story, when I was a little kid, I always had a motor mouth, and I was always getting myself in trouble in the house. Yeah, you, me, who would have thought, right? And my mother said, you should be a lawyer, Wendy Lewis, because that mouth of yours is going to get you into trouble. And if you're a lawyer, you'll be able to get yourself out of trouble. And then my father says, yeah, and you take care of the working guy, because my dad was a general contractor and had, you know, 50 guys working for his company and, you know, always involved in construction. There's always accidents. He goes, take care of the people that help build America, and you will always do well for yourself. And I mean, let me tell you something. I knocked on a law firm's door when I was in law school. I had no idea what they did.
Wait, really?
Swear. I just wanted to know if they were looking for a law clerk. Turns out they were a firm that represented people injured in construction. I'm like, oh, that's odd. And they're like, have you ever worked before? I said, I've never had a job, really. I just did this, did that. And oh, and I used to be a carpenter for my dad's construction company. You're hired. I'm like, why would you hire me because I was a carpenter? Like, don't you know what we do? I go, I have no idea what you did.
I just showed up.
I'm just knocked on your door, you know, and the rest is history. I started there in 1981. There were six lawyers, a secretary, and me, and now we're close to 100 people, and I own the firm by myself.
Well, I imagine it's partly because you understood what happens at those business sites, what can happen, what can
Absolutely.
Go wrong, what a good businessman does explaining to his workers and preparing them for what the job they need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've always had a very good connection with the client. Sometimes doctors and lawyers have a difficult time relating to somebody at a different level, which to me, they're all
right.
One level. But some people just feel differently. And I speak at union halls all the time, and people are like, God, you really, you know, like you talk our language, Lewis. I mean, we've had lawyers here before, and nobody understands what they're saying. You're like talking like you've actually been on a scaffold, you know, painting or swinging a hammer or welding. I said, well, I've swung a hammer on one. I haven't done the other things, but, you know, I try to play to my crowd, and it's legitimate. It's very easy to do. It's been my whole life. So I'm very, very honored at the background that my dad gave me, and it's done well for me and my family, obviously.
I think it also comes from a respect for the work ethic
Absolutely.
That people go through, and the value of a hard day's work, and when you can't work anymore because of a workplace injury, what that means to you and your family.
Right, and it just gives us the desire to really protect that poor injured guy, because it's not just some guy that, you know, broke his hand or broke a leg or is in a wheelchair. It's his wife, it's his children, it's his support staff, his mother, his father, his siblings, people that are helping him to pay his bills and building a ramp for him to get into his front door. There's a whole network of people that it involves. And it's, you know, so when they say, you know, it takes a village, well, when somebody gets seriously hurt, a village has been affected. And so there's a lot of people that we are responsible for. And so many people, unfortunately, in my business is just about making the money.
Right.
You know, if it's a big case and there's a lot of insurance, I can make a lot of money. You're my guy. And if not, we're not really interested. And I've taken a lot of smaller cases, taken some really difficult cases, and cases that really didn't pay off because there was no insurance there. Or maybe sometimes it's my guy's own fault. And in a litigation file, you know, you've got to find fault on the other party.
Right.
And it's not there. But, Lewis, you gave us a hell of a run, man. You gave it the best shot, and that's really all that we could ask for.
I was going to ask about that because, you know, sometimes there is that reputation that people, and I think you're talking about other lawyers that, yeah, they just take the slam dunks perhaps, or the ones that they think they can make a quick buck on, when the reality is, and you mentioned it takes a village for these employees and their jobs. It takes a village at the team that what you're doing to do what you do.
Yeah, and there is a big advantage being in a large firm like my firm is. I mean, not that I'm saying anything negative about a smaller firm, but if you're a three- or four-man law firm and you want to take a big case to trial and you need two lawyers on it, well, that's 50% of your whole firm is now out of pocket for 2, 3, 4 weeks. Whereas in a large firm, if you've got a staff of 100 people and you need to have – a paralegal and a secretary and two lawyers fully dedicated to that trial, to prep for it and for the trial itself. So you've got, you know, 5 or 6 people out of 100.
Yeah.
The clock just keeps working. People keep doing their thing. Court cases are covered. Depositions are proceeding. You know, and it doesn't – it's like, oh, my God, the wheels of the time have to stop because we have this massive trial. No, we're fortunate in that regard. And that good fortune is bestowed upon our clients as well. Because we don't have to tell them, listen, you know, it's not the greatest offer in the world. It's probably worth more. But, God, it would be really tough to try this case for me. So
to be honest with them, right. And that's a hard decision to make, yeah. But I mean, and that comes with the experience of having done it for a long time. You know what plays out in a courtroom or what may not play out in a courtroom, and that expertise is important.
Absolutely. And now obviously, nobody can predict what will happen in a courtroom, and that's what we always are very mindful of when talking to our clients is, listen, I can tell you, and this is the honest to God thing I tell my clients, I will guarantee you when this trial is over, you will look at me and you will thank me and say, you gave a hell of a good trial. You're phenomenal what you do. You did everything that you needed to do. I couldn't imagine a better presentation. But I can't tell you what the jury's going to do because I've tried cases that I absolutely should have crushed the other side. And the jury comes back and for whatever reason, they don't think so.
Yeah.
And I've had cases, I'm like, oh, God, I just don't think it's going to go our way. Things didn't work. The witnesses didn't
feel right.
The testimony wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to be. And holy cow, like the greatest verdict in the world.
Yeah.
You're like, how did that happen? So, you know, all I can do is guarantee is I'll be the hardest man in that courtroom. No one will ever be more prepared than me or one of my lawyers in that courtroom. But what the jury's going to do, you know, people don't realize. They think that, like, oh, the judge makes a decision in a jury or the lawyers get together and make the decision for what the jury will do.
No.
You present the evidence, the jury gets read the law, and they go in a room and close a door, and who knows what those 12 people are going to do.
Right. And love it or hate it, but it's a beautiful system.
It's the greatest system in the country, in the world.
Right.
No other country has what we have, where 12 of your peers will make the decision, whether it's a criminal case or a civil case, on whether you're going to jail and how long, or whether you're going to get $1 million or you're going to get nothing. And we rely upon our peers to make those decisions. But then when we hear about it in the news, they're like, oh, my God, those lawyers, those plaintiff's lawyers, they're killing us. Look what they did. How could anybody get millions of dollars for that?
Well, right.
Housewives and accountants and doctors and people working in bakeries sat on that jury. They're the ones that decided. Your next door neighbor decided, John.
Yeah.
Don't complain about the lawyers and the judge. You know, you want to change what happens?
Right.
Go become a state senator. Change the law. But right now, our law is trial by jury.
For sure.
And that's a good thing to have.
I would agree with that. I was reading on your website too, Lou, the idea that I think either you or someone on your team had tried a case in another county, not Cook County, and said something like, you're not going to get Cook County money out here. What is that distinction? Is there really a sense that some people think before a case that if you try something in Cook County, you're more likely to get more money than some of the collar counties?
It's absolutely true.
Okay.
And I'll tell you the reason why. What I just said a minute ago, who makes the decision on what the case is worth? The jury of your peers, right? Well, if you get hurt in very conservative DuPage County, you're only, you know, 20 miles west of here, but the people that generally live in DuPage County, they're much more conservative, they're more Republican, and they are more, when it comes to looking at a case and analyzing the case, they're very educated typically, and they will much more scrutinize the facts, they will much more scrutinize the evidence. They'll sit there and say, well, you know, I think that there's obviously insurance involved, and why give this guy $1 million? My car insurance is going to probably go up as a result of this. They overanalyze.
Interesting.
They do things that the law does not allow you to do. It tells you not to do that.
Right.
But that's what they do. Now you go into in a very rural area out like by Joe Davies County or, you know, somewhere central Illinois, and those are just really simple people. They're farmers. They're people that they work their butts off, and to make a decent wage to pay their bills, they're killing themselves. And then some hotshot lawyer from Chicago comes in and says, oh, give this guy $1 million because he broke his wrist. And they're like, well, are you kidding me? Well, you know, coming to Chicago, the majority of the people on the jury, you're going to get a huge diverse mix. You'll get some Republicans. You'll get some Democrats, more Democrats,
right,
obviously. You'll get more minorities here. You get people that are more socially conscious. And they'll look and say, wait a minute, that changed that housewife's life. Yeah, so she doesn't, not working for a living. But that woman, every day, she's cleaning the house. She's doing the laundry. She's taking care of the kids. And she's got that broken wrist. And it's hurting. It's her dominant hand. I mean, I'm just texting my friends on my phone, and my dominant hand would
it's a much more personal thing.
Exactly. So they start
interesting.
They start thinking, you know, how would I like it if that was me? And they have a tendency to give more money.
Interesting.
So it's, I mean, it is not a BS stereotype. It's the real deal.
Right.
It really, and there's statistics on it. I tried a case up in Galena where I sat down with the judge. My guy had a really, really, really bad ankle fracture. He had several surgeries. He fell off a scaffold 30 feet that he borrowed someone else's scaffold that was missing a guardrail, and he knew it, and he walked right off of it. But he was spray painting black spray paint 30 feet in the air. He couldn't even see where the end of the guardrail was, or the end of the scaffold was.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge is like, you know, Mr. Cairo, I don't see the liability. Your guy borrowed someone else's scaffold without permission, and he walked right off of it. And your demand is $3.5 million. I mean, we don't get verdicts like that up here. Our record verdict's $1,056,000. And I said, well, Judge, I'm going to get it on this one. And we tried the case, and I got a $3 million verdict.
Wow.
And the jury said, well, the guy was a third responsible, so they knocked it down by a third or $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was still a $2 million verdict. But the interesting thing about that case, my entire jury, people that lived in the North Shore and people that lived in like Glencoe, Northbrook, Highland Park, Mundelein, that all moved out that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the farmers and the people living out there that are killing us. It's all retirees and people that they came from Cook County, most of them, and they gravitated out there, or they migrated out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's funny. We got the big verdict because we happen to have Cook County residents that relocated to Galena. Just the luck of the draw.
Yeah, and you know, obviously we're speaking generally about things, but you've seen it, of course, in courtrooms and how that works. I guess I never thought through that obviously the geographical location of where you are. You know, I've thought about it for criminal cases, like, oh, we've been inundated with the news of this story here in this county. We know about it. Other counties may not. But not about the makeup of people and maybe their background and their walk of life and what that matters.
Their political aspirations.
Because yeah.
Typical Republican people are very much tort reformers.
Mm-hmm.
They are beating the drum of, we need tort reform. It's a shame that people could get all this money because it's costing us money. Your typical Democrat is saying, hey, we take care of the little guy.
Right.
I mean, or if it's a rich guy or it's a poor guy, if he gets hurt, gets the same entitlement, the same justice, the same benefits, the same amount of money, maybe not for the wage loss, because
right.
The rich guy's going to lose a lot of money.
Right.
But his pain and suffering is no different whether you live in a little apartment or you live in the penthouse at a high-rise building. I mean, pain and suffering is what it is. So, you know, we see in certain areas they respect that, in other areas they're very, very – they take the knife and they just cut it in half and, okay, you're this part of the society, that's what you get. You're this part, we'll listen to you.
Well, we want someone like Luke Cairo from GWC to be helping us out. We're going to take a break for the news. Where do you want people to reach you if they have to run right now and they're not going to hear the rest of it?
It's a tough number to remember. 999-99-99.
Just keep hitting nine.
If you have a stutter finger and just keep stuttering on the nine, you're going to get us.
I do too. It shakes a little bit sometimes.
312 and just a whole bunch of nines.
Thanks so much, Lou. You're going to stick around, though. We're going to take a quick break here. We got the news now on WGN. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Some sunshine here downtown. Hope it's sunny where you are as well. John Hansen here and joined by Lou Cairo, GWC Injury Attorneys. And Lou, we were just kind of talking during the news, and I wanted you to kind of update folks. I think some people think, oh, the wheels of justice are grinding back and we're getting back to normal. And maybe in some areas that's the case, but it's still, especially in Cook County, we have a backlog of cases that is continuing to grow.
Yes, that's very true, John. You know, when the pandemic hit, it was, I think it was the 11th of March, the court system got closed down pretty much throughout the state because of the emergency orders from the judge, Governor Pritzker.
Mm-hmm.
Cook County has not opened for live trials. They've had three trials that I'm aware of that have occurred in Cook County. They required three courtrooms to do it. You put the judge and the witnesses and the court reporter in one. You put three jurors in another. Put three jurors in another courtroom.
My gosh.
You have TV monitors. It's like a big Zoom trial, and that. You know, and you can't do that in a criminal case because every witness has or every defendant has a right to confront their witnesses.
Right.
And that means face to face in front of a jury. In the circuit court, they're allowing it if parties all agree to it. But you can't, you know, instead of having 50 trials going on any one given day, you need three courtrooms. So you're going to get 15 or 16 trials at best. And it hasn't happened. And the real reason that I think why it hasn't happened is because the Daly Center is a 30-something story building, and all the trial courts are on the 20th floor and above. And getting lawyers and getting witnesses and getting jurors into an elevator crammed full of people is just, it's something that with the pandemic, I don't really care if you think that COVID is ridiculous.
Whatever
or
the case.
Or you're scared to hell of COVID.
Right.
Nobody, it's the best excuse for anybody to not want to go to court.
Right.
You know, it would be pre-pandemic. It was difficult to convince people. You got the summons, and we really want you to serve on the jury. This is your one of the highest civic duties you could ever have besides serving in the military. God bless you if you have. But the highest thing you could do as a civilian is to serve on a jury. And that, you know, that is what our jury system is made of. It's made of jurors going there, swearing to take the oath, and then following the law and, you know, administering justice to the litigants in the case. And you give them $25 a day. That just upped about 2 years ago. It went from $17 to $25 a day. Now they got to come downtown. Miss their own job, not get paid for it. Bring a sandwich or go downtown and find a $9 hamburger.
Right.
And that $25 goes really, really quick, right?
Boy,
so it was tough to get people to get in there. And then you're asking them to give justice to your client. My client deserves to get, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. And they're like, oh, my God. I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and I haven't gotten a paycheck for 2 weeks because I'm sitting on this trial where your guy wants to get $1 million. It was tough.
Yeah.
Now you throw the pandemic in there and tell them you've got to come downtown, take public transportation to get here, or pay $30 a day to park your car. That's more than the $25 you're going to even get.
Right.
And then you're going to get in an elevator crammed with people, and you're going to sit in a room with 500 to 1,000 individuals waiting for them to call your number, and then you're going to get in an elevator together, and you're going to sit in a courtroom crammed in there while they question you about your personal life.
Yeah.
People are like, no way. It's not going to happen. And the judges, most of the judges are 50 and older, and there's a lot in their 70s. They're very, very content sitting at home at their kitchen table doing their Zoom motions.
Right.
And they're working hard from home.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they really are.
Oh, for sure.
But they're doing status calls. You're doing case management conferences. They're doing motions. They're doing pre-trials. And they can do that by Zoom. And it's much safer for them to do it from home. I don't blame them one bit.
Right.
You know, so they would rather, hey, let's find the cure or let's find a way to do this safely for the citizens as well as for ourselves. And until then, we'll just keep working our butts off doing what we're doing at home. But meanwhile, you can't get the trials done. When
right.
you're in a 38, 40-story building, the Daily Center, you can't get the trial done without having people in and out of an elevator. That's the big problem.
Uh-huh.
Out-of-county trial or courtrooms, most of them, you go up one or two flights of stairs.
And right.
You know, they don't have, you know, 30-story buildings to get in and out of.
So I want to know, so obviously you guys you're still taking cases, even though this backlog is there. You're working with clients. You're developing research. You're doing all the things that you do. Maybe settling. Can you settle cases still?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the insurance companies and the defense bar have been very cooperative. You know, the insurance company could really say, we've got our foot on the neck of plaintiff's lawyers.
I was going to say.
Because what's the big driving force? If you owed me $1 million or $5,000, John, and I said, you can pay me in 3 years when we get to trial, or you can pay me right now, you'd be like, yeah, I'll wait 3 years,
I'll
Lewis.
Wait.
Same amount of money? I'll wait 3 years.
And
why wouldn't
clients
I?
Can afford it a lot of times.
Right.
The waiting
well,
is fine.
Well, the insurance companies, you know they're going to, we'll take that $5,000, we'll put it in an investment, and in 3 years, the $5,000 will be $7,500. So we'll make $2,500 while you wait and starve, John. So if you want to settle it now, you want to settle it early, you got to take a haircut.
Yeah.
If you're it's a $50,000 claim, we'll settle for $35,000. They're gonna make an offer, and some people will say, I don't have a choice,
right.
Counsel. I don't have a choice. I mean, yeah, it's less than my case is worth, but right now I'm paying bills. I got a car. I got a mortgage. Yeah, I'm not working. I need that money. So that is happening. But a lot of the insurance companies, particularly on the bigger cases, are being very, very respectful of the situation, and they're really not taking advantage
That's
of it.
That's good.
First 6 months, they were, in my opinion.
Okay.
After that, it started really opening up, and we've been really, really fortunate to be able to resolve some, you know, $3.5 million, $4 million. I did one for $1.5 million yesterday. My partner did one for $1.5 on Wednesday. Did one for $1.25 last week. Those are big cases, and we settled those for really fair value. And I keep, you know, I even told my partners, wow. I mean, they're paying us really good money, and we don't have a trial date. I mean, I'm going to keep them on my list. I'm going to send them a Christmas card just as a thank you, because
right.
they're being very, very fair. I think they're just realizing, you know, these are, they're all publicly traded corporations.
Right.
And, you know, the people that are our shareholders are a lot of them are litigants against us. You know,
right.
They're just, they're starting to do the right thing, and it's refreshing.
When you mention those big numbers, it's funny because my brain does exactly what you were describing about the differences between suburban and city. I was going back in my head. I'm like, that does sound like a lot of money. But I mean, we're talking about an injury at work, you lost wages for years. I mean, $1 million is a lot of money. You're not going to be wrong. But when you add up the cost of raising and having a family, I mean, a lot of these people deserve that. I mean, that is what they need.
Yeah. I mean, there's not too many cases, John, honestly, where we look back and go, God, that guy really got a lot of money for that little injury he had. You get a literal injury, you get a little money.
Uh-huh.
Somebody who's, you know, a construction worker, we do represent a lot of iron workers and carpenters and plumbers and just everyday people as well. But you take somebody who guy hasn't worked for a year and a half, 2 years, and he's making $80,000 a year, plus he's got benefits of $40,000 a year for his insurance, his annuity, his pension, things that he wasn't getting while he wasn't working. So this guy's losing $120,000 a year. 2 years, he's lost $240,000.
Right.
Now, when you give him in a verdict $240,000, he's not, I just made $240,000.
Right.
Because I'm in the hole $240,000.
Yes.
You just made me whole on that. So now I'm even. I haven't gotten a dollar of profit yet, right? He's got $200,000 in medical bills. And, you know, if he's got insurance, and they usually do, you give him $200,000, he's got to pay back the $200,000 to the insurance company. So he was in the hole, $200,000. Now you gave him another two to cover the medical. He's got to pay back to the insurance company. He's still at hole. You've given him $250 for wages. You've given him $200 for medical. That's $450. He's
zero.
Now
he's net.
Even from a financial standpoint. Now he's got his pain and suffering. He's got his disabilities, loss of normal life. He's got the disfigurement because he's got scars. His spouse has a loss of consortium because they were living a wonderful life. They were traveling. They were working out together, going on walks together. Now he's at home. He's limping around. He barely leaves the house. He's in a bad mood. Their peachy, wonderful life has now changed significantly. Their golden years are 5 years away. They're not going to enjoy it. This guy's going to have all these back problems. And she's entitled to a lot of money. So now you start putting money on there. And so, yeah, so you give them $500,000 for pain and suffering. You give them $500,000 for disability. Give the wife $150,000 for loss of consortium, whatever the numbers are.
Right.
Those numbers I just gave you, you get, you know, $500,000 and $500,000. So you got $1 million. You got $150,000 for the wife. So you've got $1.15. You got $450,000. You have $1.6 million. Takes out attorney's fees of a third. He's got $1 million. And he was in the hole $250,000 for the medical. He got to pay back the medical, and he's got to pay back his workers' comp lien. The guy doesn't walk away with walk away with $1.6 million. He walks away with, you know, $700,000 or something.
Right. He's not Mr. Moneybags walking around.
But every single morning he wakes up and says, "Oh boy, it's another day with this bad back of mine or my ankle or whatever the case may be." And everything he does is affected. People feel, "Oh, he got all that money. This is awesome." You wouldn't want to live the life of the guy that got $1 million, because that guy, if he is getting $1 million, that man has gone through hell and will continue to, or woman, will continue for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. I want to give our audience just a little tangible thing. We've been talking about on-the-job injuries. Just really quickly, if someone, because I mentioned people hear that number and they go, "Well, my injury isn't enough," or they say that, or, you know, "Well, I injured it at work." I mean, that's what happens to people, and I still go, and they still pay me, but then, boy, this hurts. What should people do if they think that maybe this situation applies to them?
First of all, let me just clarify one thing. Like, when we're talking about $1 million, $1.5 million, things like that, I'm talking about like a common law case where you are suing someone other than your employer.
Okay.
A workers' compensation claim is different. And you can be on the job, like, say, a carpenter falls off of a scaffold because the scaffold company didn't put a guardrail on there, as an example.
Right.
Or the electrician comes by in a bobcat and he bumps into the scaffold, knocks it over. That worker has a workers' comp case against his employer. I'll tell you what those benefits are in a moment. And they have a third-party case against the company that didn't put the guardrail up and or the company that had bumped into the scaffold. Two completely different cases.
Okay.
So the workers' comp case, and this is important because workers' comp cases they can be huge, like the one I just gave an example of. The guy falls off the scaffold, he's paralyzed. Or sometimes they're minimal cases. It could be where the guy's off for 3 or 4 weeks and he gets back to work. The question is, how do they get their benefits? And there's something, and I guarantee if your listeners are listening, unless they've had a workers' comp case before or they've worked for a law firm or an insurance company, none of your listeners are going to know what I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
And this is the most important rule in a workers' comp case. If you get hurt in the job, you must give notice to your employer, to a supervisor, a foreman, HR, somebody in authority, within 45 days of your accident. And if you don't, you don't have a case.
I mean, nothing you can do.
If you have 25 witnesses, and they're all coworkers, but nobody's a foreman or a supervisor, and they all see the accident, it's on videotape.
Right.
But nobody tells the boss. Like, the guy falls, and he goes, oh, don't tell the boss. I don't want him to get mad at me. I think I'm going to be okay. And he goes to his private doctor, and he's paying his bills, and he never tells the employer, and suddenly he needs to have surgery. And, like, the guys all walk in the office on the 46th day, and they're like, boss, we saw it. In fact, we've got it on videotape.
Yeah.
This really did happen. The boss could say, hey, I'd like to take care of you, but the insurance company's going to give you nothing because you didn't give notice. So that's really, like, one of the most important rules, and people don't know that because, you know what? Employers don't tell their employees
right.
that, John, and there's
right.
a reason why they don't.
Right.
Because if you don't give notice, they don't have to pay a dime through their insurance company.
So the first thing is anything.
Yeah, even if it's a minor. Like, let's say you twinge your back. Oh, man, my back doesn't feel right. I picked up that file, and, you know, you tell your boss, listen, I just want to let you know, I picked up a file, and I bent over such and such, and I got this twinged on my back, and I think I'll be okay, but
right.
I'm just letting you know.
Let's get this on the record.
And then you send a little email confirming or a text message, right? Now nobody can forget about that conversation.
Right.
If nothing happens, nothing happens. And you don't go to the doctor. Hey, how's your back doing, John? Yeah, I'm fine. You know, it was just a little nothing twinge, thank God. Versus, hey, how's your back, John? Well, I went to my doctor yesterday, and he said I have to get an MRI. They think I have a herniated disc, which might need to be operated on. Holy cow, from that pick up that file, John? Yeah. Well, geez, well, let me know. You come back a couple weeks later. You need back surgery. You better report it, boss, to the insurance company. They report it. You're going to get all of your medical benefits. Workers' comp has to pay 100% of your medical bills. You're going to get 2/3 of your average weekly wages for every week that you are unable to do your job, tax-free. So if somebody's making $52,000 a year, an average average is $1,000 a week, they're getting $666 tax-free, which is about what you take home if you're making $1,000 a
right.
week anyways because of taxes. And this is all tax-free money. So while you're being rehabilitated, while you're getting your treatment, and workers' comp is paying for your medical, workers' comp is also paying you your 2/3 so you could pay your bills, support your family. And then ultimately, when you're done, you've reached your maximum medical improvement. They'll evaluate the extent of your disability. And then, we work out a settlement for that particular type of an injury. And then your case is over once you get your settlement. But that's workers' comp.
So you got to look out for yourself, number one. Make sure there's paperwork. And then hit 9 as many times as you can and get you, Lou.
That's right. Absolutely.
I really appreciate you joining us. Hope we'll chat again, okay?
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Go White Sox tonight.
Go White Sox, baby.
Yeah, there you go. Hopefully we'll get to see Kimbrel tonight. Lou Cairo, of course, GWC Injury Attorneys. Take care, my friend. All right. Well, plenty more coming up on Let's Get Legal after this on WGN.